Don't move. You're listening to Harpy Hour.
We just want to share another awesome podcast with you first.
So check these guys out and stay tuned for this week's episode of Harpy Hour.
Your time is valuable. Here at Dungeon Digressions, we encourage you to make every second count. Why spend minutes of your life listening to epic adventures, exploring new worlds, and getting lost in amazing story arcs and relatable character growth when you could be doing your daily routine every day, all day? Who especially wants to hear a bunch of gnomes chaotically traversing the world? They're filthy, whiny, don't understand magic, and are just seen as ugly kids.
We're not kids.
At least spend your precious moments listening to another fine podcast like this one you currently enjoy. Good choice. And ignore this tumultuous group of gnomes guaranteeing their deathy fate. Well done. Don't listen. No matter what. DungeonDigressions.com.
Harpy Hour may contain explicit language, as well as graphic, violent, and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harpy Hour.
The harpiest of all your daily hours.
Oh,
don't like it. Nope.
No. All right. I was trying something new. All right.
Veto.
It got vetoed.
Yeah. Veto.
Not everything makes it out of the workshop, you guys.
Back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm. Cutting room floor.
We are the harpies.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Liz.
I'm Steph. And I have veto power.
I mean... I felt it.
It's actually a majority, according to our contract. It's true.
That's how we decided that it's coupons and not coupons.
It's coupons. Coupons.
You can say that all you want, but you were outvoted.
I want to look up the official pronunciation.
I'm going to Google it right now.
Please do.
I am. Coupon. Okay, I'm just getting a bunch of coupons. Hold on. Pronunciation. I'm going to click the thing that says practice. Here, hold on.
I just like how this thing... Is it pronounced coupon or coupon? And it's the same thing.
Coupon. Like, now it's going to judge how I'm saying it. Coupon. It says, you may have added a Y.
Oh.
Oh my God, the way that it said... The way that my phonetics... They wrote K-Y-O-O... P-A-A-N-Z. Yeah.
That's how you're pronouncing it.
Coupons!
Well, on dictionary.com, the American pronunciation variant is with the Y sound.
Ha!
Like, the British is coup because it comes from French origin, but it's an American variant to say Q.
Here you go. Listen.
Coupon.
You hear that?
Coupon.
There's an American variant.
I don't think you heard what Liz said.
Thank you.
It says K-O-O-P-A-A-N.
Also, coupon. You've been outvoted. You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
So, yeah, dictionary.com says the American variant with an unhistoric Y sound, not justified by the spelling, is used by educated speakers and is well established as perfectly standard, although it is sometimes criticized. But it is accepted.
I criticize it.
In the American language. Okay. Well, you're outvoted.
By you two. That's it.
We are the majority.
Of the three of us, not of
Correct.
America.
That's all that matters.
And that's all that stands right now. So
this is a tomato potato or tomato tomato situation.
Fuck that up too. You're wrong.
Tomato tomato situation.
Now, more importantly, is it pecan or pecan?
Pecan.
No,
it's pecan.
Pecan is a can that you pee in.
Who pees in a can?
Someone does. I don't know who, but someone does.
Yeah, Liz likes to say that. It's a can that you pee in. Liz, do you pee in cans?
Well, no.
But she doesn't coupon either, so... Irrelevant to whether the word exists and it's...
Tell me someone you know who pees in a can.
Well, that's why we just don't say it that way, because it would be a gross thing.
You're wrong. Did we say who we are?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did we say what we're doing?
Okay. We did.
We have a podcast. You're here. Welcome. Where we debate how to pronounce words. That's the entire podcast.
Didn't we also debate previously the pronunciation of the word pronunciation?
Well, that's because yes. Liz said pronunciation, and that was incorrect.
Well, anyway. So the other day, I had our friend Megan over. I swear to God, now every time I say Megan, I want to say Schmegan as if to hide her identity, and like her name's not even Megan to begin with.
That is her alias, is Megan.
Megan came over and told me that Willow was looking a little chonky.
How dare you fat shame my cat?
Which definitely should not be the case because she's on like a weight management diet. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I think she just looks like a cat. She's not skinny anymore. Like, not like overt. She's not emaciated.
I mean, she wasn't really to begin with. When I got her and took her to her first vet appointment, they were like, she's at her ideal weight. Like, so, like, I wouldn't let her gain any more weight. So that's why she's like, be a little bit conservative with her calories so that she doesn't, like, you know, go all out now that she has a new home and get fat.
I'm so disappointed in Megan for fat shaming. I'm so disappointed.
I know, right?
So I realized it has been a little while since I brushed her. So after Megan left, I brushed Willow a whole bunch. And I swear to God, she looked absolutely no different afterwards. Despite the like volumes of fur I took off of her.
Yeah.
But then like, so 3 days later, Megan came back over and she goes, huh, she doesn't look as chunky as she did the other day.
I think Megan is delusional at this point.
It was apparently just she lost 10 pounds from a hairbrushing.
Oh, okay. Does that work on humans too?
The hair adds 10 pounds.
That's what Megan was joking. She's like, I wish I could just lose weight that easily.
Yeah, right.
I wish somebody else could brush my hair and then I'd be skinny.
Yes. Amazing.
Well, Steph.
Yes.
What do you have to share with us today?
This is an awful show.
Yes.
We light it up. We can't come down.
And the walls can't stop us now. Okay, well, that's going to be in my head for the next however.
Liz, I have no idea what you said because Tracy was singing.
That's accurate.
Oh, I said, is it the most awful show in the world?
This is an awful show. Oh, I'm so excited. I have nothing. I have nothing to guess.
I have absolutely no idea what, an awful show.
Is it a live show or is it like a reality like TV show?
We're gonna have to find out, Tracy.
It was a live show?
Was a live show. Okay.
Is it like is it a medical thing? Is it like going to see a live demonstration of somebody getting their chest cut open?
No.
Mm. Okay. I'm hoping it's something like really poorly written. I'm very excited now.
I mean, it's not anything about pop culture because Steph
doesn't do pop culture.
I thought you guys would have guessed it from the title, but I guess not.
Well, is it Ringling Brothers, like the circus?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh. I thought that was way too obvious.
That's too spot on.
I thought you were just using that. Yeah, I thought you were a little more creative than that, Stephanie, but gave you too much credit. Excellent. I'm excited. Let's go.
So we sing clips from The Greatest Showman often enough, and I heard that the real story behind Barnum and Bailey's circus was a little bit more sordid and fucked up than in the movie.
Yeah.
So I decided to dig into it to see if it was Harpy Hour material, and it is.
Full disclosure, I did a promotion of one of the circuses in a past life, and it was the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey thing. So I might know portions of this, but it was back in 2013. So I'm probably forgot like 90% of it.
Well, feel free to chime in if you recall things that I don't dig into as much. So Phineas Taylor Barnum, P.T. Barnum of Barnum and Bailey's. Yep. He was born on July 5th, 1810 in Bethel, Connecticut.
The 1800s!
Grew up in the North before the Civil War. In 1829, at the age of 19, he married Charity Hallett.
What a name.
Which is way too young to be married. Yeah.
A million but too young to get married. Dreams are keeping me open.
They would go on to have four children, all girls, a major disappointment to Bailey, or Barnum, rather.
I mean, yeah. Women are so disappointing.
He had multiple businesses as a young man, including a general store, a state lottery, and a book auctioning trade. Hmm. And he started a newspaper in 1829 called the Herald of Freedom. Ugh. He was jailed for 2 months after being prosecuted for libel when he wrote editorials against the church elders.
I mean, that's badass. I support that.
Yeah, he was arrested 3 times for libel, and he kind of seemed to like the notoriety he received for it.
Yeah.
But he pictured himself doing more.
Okay.
He reflected back in his autobiography. He said, quote, "I had long fancied that I could succeed if I could only get a hold of a public exhibition."
Okay.
That's like me saying, if only I could run a Broadway show, I'd be successful. Like,
yes.
Yeah, obviously, if you could,
yes,
do that,
I
you'd
believe
be successful.
You could, well, not every...
If only I could own a Fortune 500 business, I would be successful.
Yeah, that's a little more accurate, because having a Broadway show does not necessitate that you are successful in that endeavor.
Yeah. True. I was just keeping it in the performance realm, but that's accurate, yes.
Tiger King opened up a zoo, and I don't know if I'd call that successful.
I'm looking at you, Diana, on Broadway.
In 1835, at the age of 25, he purchased the right to rent a black woman named Joyce Heth. This is where we start to get a little...
Yeah, it's really not great.
From here on, this is where it gets kind of cringy. Joyce was blind and almost completely paralyzed. She could talk and she could move her right arm. She had deep wrinkles, long fingernails, no teeth. He got her from a man who had been promoting her in Philadelphia as the 161-year-old former nurse of George Washington.
Oh, I think I heard about this, actually.
Did you?
Yeah. I guess I didn't know what its association with P.T. Barnum was, but I heard about this alleged
161-year-old nurse.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was 161. I mean,
she would have to be.
Yeah, I knew about the George Washington thing, but like, and that it, and that she was a disabled black woman, but like,
yeah, really, you'd have to be really fucking old for that to be accurate.
Yep.
So slavery was prohibited in New York at this point in time, but he was able to quote unquote lease her for a year for $1,000 via some like legal loophole he found.
Lease her from whom? Like,
from the guy who had her before.
From an owner?
I don't think he was an owner either. I think there was just some, like, people were jumping through legal loopholes left and right to, like, lease, quote unquote, this black woman.
Great.
He had to borrow half the money to lease her, but that ended up being no big deal because Barnum took her on tour and she apparently ranked in $1,500 per week, I believe, in then money.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I did not have time to look up the translation for.
Fucking ruining everything.
Well, if someone wants to plug in $1,835, $1,500, and let me know.
It sounds like I'm doing it, so go ahead.
Okay. One researcher who looked into P.T. Barnum's history summed up this transaction, stating that Barnum, quote, "began his career in show business by going into debt to buy a superannuated female slave who turned out to be a fraud."
Okay, I have the number.
$47,145.85.
Jeez.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of fucking money. Mm-hmm. So he made that up.
Okay, great.
Anyway, spoilers. She wasn't 161 years old.
What? And
did not nurse George Washington. It's not. It didn't happen.
I want my money back.
As part of the show, she would tell stories about little George, and Barnum made up some stories about her, for different audiences. He would just make up different stories. One time he even claimed she wasn't even actually a human, that she was just a automaton, like basically a robot.
Did they have robots? Like,
so like an automaton isn't like a robot per se. It's more like, you never go see one of those machines where it's like a fortune teller in a glass container, and she's just like,
are you talking about like the animatronics in Disney World, like something similar
kind of like
that?
Yeah, it's more like that. Okay. Yeah,
all
like,
right,
where they just like move and say a few random things, like they he just claimed that she was that. I don't know why that helps his case.
Yeah, that doesn't make it better.
I don't know. I think
it's
he just
another
like,
novelty.
He just made up shit on the fly just for funsies. And this woman worked 10 to 12 hours per day.
Of course.
Joyce died in 1836, but Barnum wasn't quite done with her yet and decided to squeeze the last few dollars out of her.
No.
He did. By holding a live autopsy of her body.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. I thought he was going to say, like, oh, she didn't die, and just, like, propped her up. Like, Weekend at Bernie's style.
Or that one that Lewis talked about, the outlaw.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, what is he, dipped in wax
His
or something?
Mummified body on tour for a while. I would like to say that my initial guess of what your topic was is like 5% correct.
What was your initial guess?
I said, is it like a live show where they like do like cut somebody's chest open?
There's an incident.
Okay, that was literally the only part in the entire story that even a little bit medical.
That's why I said 5%.
All right, fine.
5% is all we're giving you.
That's generous.
1,500 points to Liz.
No.
No. 1,500 people attended the autopsy. Oh.
Look at that segue.
And each paid 50 cents.
Seamless.
Again, didn't calculate how much that is in today's money.
No, I closed the window already. I'm not looking that one up.
Keep it up because there's a few in here that I did
God
not
damn
calculate.
It, Steph.
Do we need it?
I mean, if you want to. The autopsy revealed that she was no more than 80 years old. So like half the age she was claiming her to be.
I mean, even that's like somewhat impressive.
After Joyce passed away, he went on to purchase the Scudder's American Museum in New York in December of 1841. And he renamed it Barnum's American Museum.
Bam.
What?
Bam.
Bam.
Barnum's American Museum.
Bam. Yes, bam. Okay, I got it. Took me a second.
I did not get that immediately. Continue.
He lined the roof's edges with flags, and there were these giant paintings of animals on the walls. And at night, he had this lighthouse lamp to obnoxiously get people's attention along Broadway to bring them into the museum.
Okay.
He had a rooftop garden with views of the city, and he had like hot air balloons that he would have people ride from the rooftop. And he had more than 4,000 visitors per day. They each paid 25 cents to enter. Did not calculate what that is today.
We're just going to assume that it's
more.
A reasonable price.
Sure. The museum reportedly housed 850,000 quote-unquote curiosities.
Very vague thing, but go ahead.
Well, these curiosities included exotic animals, albinos, people with gigantism, people with dwarfism,
sure.
Jugglers, magicians, exotic women, which I can only assume means not white women.
Yeah, just women of color, but go ahead.
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> detailed models of cities and battlefields.
I mean, that's kind of cool.
A year later, he started to get a little bit more creative, and he mixed in a few hoaxes. Obvious. He had the Fiji mermaid. Spelt F-E-E-J-E-E. I don't know why.
Yep. Is that a copyright thing? Like, you can't spell it the correct way?
I don't think there's a copyright for the word for the
Maybe.
Country
you don't
of
know.
Fiji.
You don't know.
It was actually a preserved juvenile monkey head and torso sewn onto a preserved fish tail.
Awesome. So they just took it was just special taxidermy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah. Allegedly, it was caught near the Fiji Islands. In his autobiography, Barnum later described the mermaid as, quote, an ugly, dried up, black looking diminutive specimen about 3 feet long. Its mouth was open, its tail turned over, and its arms thrown up, giving it the appearance that it had died in great agony.
I mean, that doesn't sound fun.
Well, I think it did.
Probably.
Yeah, it just wasn't a fucking mermaid. Like,
he publicized the Fiji mermaid by... So he had an associate of his in business pretend to be a doctor. And that doctor claimed he caught this creature in South America, so not Fiji.
Okay. So and then already fucking up their story. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly. He showed the mermaid to a hotel landlord when he checked into a hotel to be like, oh, you've been so kind to me. Like, thank you for your hospitality. Look at this thing that I have. And the landlord was like all interested in it and ended up spreading word to a bunch of newspaper editors like, oh, this doctor came to town and he has this crazy creature. And so then the doctor, so like all the newspapers are writing about it. The doctor then went to doctor, quote unquote, a local concert hall and was showing small audiences this creature for like 5 days or something, and then decided to bring it to Barnum's Museum. And so now people could only go to the museum to see it. So he basically drummed up all of this like false publicity about how this thing was found and brought to him before actually displaying it in his own museum just to get people interested.
It's hyping it up.
Exactly.
Yeah. That mermaid's hype man.
Yes. It's like 3 foot monkey fish. Then there was General Tom Thumb.
I don't like this.
Quote, the smallest person that ever walked alone. Tom had dwarfism.
Okay.
And he was only a little more than 2 feet tall at this point in time.
Okay.
Tom was actually a 4-year-old named Charles Stratton. But he was advertised to be 11.
I mean, that's like saying, I want to get back to my original weight, you know, 8 pounds, 6 ounces. Like, that's... I can't even. I'm done. Go ahead.
I read about General Tom Thumb, and it said that for the first 6 months of his life, he grew fairly normally. And then just kind of stopped growing.
I feel you, Tom.
Around 2 feet tall.
I feel you, man.
It's 2 feet. 2 feet tall seems... Is that big for a six-month-old? I have no fucking clue.
For a six-month-old? Yeah, probably.
Also, I feel like they don't call it tall. They call it long.
Long,
like, until you can stand.
Yeah. Sure.
It's just your length.
Yeah, he was a little more than 2 feet. He was like 25 inches or something like that.
Actually, babies are born like 20 inches long. So maybe it's not.
Right? That's not that much.
That's not that big of a deal.
So anyway, so then he like grew an additional inch before he was 5 or something. And then he just kind of stopped and very slowly grew. I think his like max height was something like 3 feet or something.
Honestly, he was probably just growth deficient, which I understand.
Barnum found him as a kid at 4 years old, advertised him to be 11, taught him how to like sing and dance and act and like perform comedy banter. And he also taught him to do imitations. So as part of his act, he would imitate like famous historical figures or like Hercules, Napoleon, things like that.
I mean, but you don't have to pretend that he's a tiny adult for that. You can just say, look at this kid. This is fun. He does impressions. Like, you
maybe,
don't have to lie about it.
Maybe there was, I don't know. I don't know. He was still underage.
Stop like, defending him, Steph.
And no, I was not defending. I was going to say maybe because having a 4-year-old in your employment was questionable, but 11-year-old is also still underage, so that should still be questionable. So I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Maybe having a 11-year-old being 2 feet tall is more impressive, quote unquote, than a 4-year-old being 2 feet tall. I don't fucking know. The kid was drinking wine by 5 and smoking cigars by 7 as part of his act. So the whole thing is fucked up.
Yeah, we're not doing too great as far as boundaries are concerned here.
No. Mm-mm. Barnum toured with General Tom Thumb all over Europe between 1844 and 45. Together, they met the Queen Victoria and the Tsar of Russia. And through their travels, he was able to acquire many new attractions to bring back with him to his museum.
Okay.
Barnum's other questionable curiosities at the museum. Whenever I say curiosities, just assume there's quotes around it because it's a fucked up term.
Yeah.
Include a Native American dancer named Fu Hum Mi, and he later acquired many other First Nations people as part of his show. Nothing like weird about them, just that they are Native Americans.
That is the oddity, that they are Native Americans?
Yes. Correct.
Awesome.
He displayed Aztec children. Who were actually just El Salvadorian children who I could not figure out how he got them.
I was going to say, how were they acquired?
I don't know.
Okay.
Could not figure that out. He just had some children from El Salvador.
Just imported from El Salvador.
Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not shady at all. It's fine.
He had Siamese twins, Chang and Eng, who were actually conjoined twins. They were joined at the chest.
I was going to say, were they actually, or were they just like sharing a t-shirt?
They were actually conjoined in the middle of their chest.
Okay, so that one's a real oddity then.
Right, just kind of fucked up to make the spectacle of them. Yeah. Yes.
No, but at least that one was like a real legit, like, actually as advertised.
It wasn't fraud.
I'm not saying it's great.
Right. It is fucked up to make them a spectacle, but at the same time, and I'll circle back to them a little bit later, they pop up a little later, but it seems like they were also willing to use their their condition to make money off
themselves.
The feeling
I got was that they were disenfranchised already and they were like, might as well make some money off of the thing that makes me marginalized. Yes. Like, that was the impression.
It's more a reflection of society being like, this is a thing to oogle at, you know? Ogle at,
Oogle at.
Yeah, they were just ogle.
To Google at.
But they were just making money off of their situation.
I mean, we now look back on it and we're like, oh, that's abuse. But
cringe.
At the time, they were like, hey,
this is what we can make money off of.
I might as well make money.
So by late 1846, he had more than 400,000 visitors a year. So he was doing pretty well for himself.
Sure.
When Barnum was touring Europe with General Tom Thumb, he heard about a popular Swedish opera singer named Jenny Lind.
Never enough. Never, never.
Is that her?
Yes.
Oh, really? I don't remember the show that well.
Yep.
That's her.
That's her song.
Okay.
So I don't remember the show that well.
Well, it's, her story is very different than the movie. Before this, he had never heard of her. He had never seen her before. She was pretty much unknown in the U.S. In 1849, he approached her with a proposal to tour in the U.S. 150 nights, and he would pay her $1,000 a night because he knew she was big in Europe.
That's actually pretty accurate to how it was portrayed in the movie, but. Keep going.
Well, hang on. We'll get to. We'll finish it up. So she agreed because she planned on donating large sums of money to the to various charities. Mm-hmm. And smart lady, she got paid up front.
Amen, girl.
Yeah, right.
Get your paper.
Barnum had to borrow money from his mansion, from his museum, and from a random minister in order to like make up all the money that he had to pay her up front. The show began in September of 1850. And he had advertised her arrival in the U.S. in advance and really, like, built it up. He dubbed her the Swedish Nightingale. Americans were, like, so excited to see her that even though they'd never seen her or heard of her before, they just, like, were so excited that she was coming that when she arrived on the docks, there were 40,000 people there to greet her, an additional 20,000 at her hotel. So he must have, like, really, really built her up.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a lot of people for 1830 whatever.
Yeah, there's no internet. Like you're not getting targeted ads for this.
Exactly.
Yeah,
there's no pop-ups or spam emails to be like, you might be interested in this.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like that's more people than like show up when Justin Bieber checks into a hotel. Like,
yeah, right? It's a lot of fucking people.
Yeah.
So he really built her up. And these again, she wasn't that big in the US before this. So somehow he just built her up to be this amazing thing that you had to see. Tickets were so high in demand that Barnum was able to sell them by auction, and people were selling Jenny Lind merch. The press was calling it Lindmania, and Lind quickly realized how much money Barnum was going to make off of her and demanded they renegotiate the contract, and Barnum agreed, and she also made him agree to sell a large number of tickets at a reduced price rather than at auction because she just like wasn't okay with that. But by early 1851, so like months later, she became really uncomfortable with how much he was advertising the tour and how he was like really building this up. And she decided to end the tour prematurely. And she continued on her own as her own manager doing a tour for the next year, but just without Barnum because she was not okay with the way he was doing it.
That's fair.
Under Barnum, she performed 93 concerts and earned $350,000 in back then money, which is almost $11,000 today. Oh, sorry, $11 million.
Look at you doing your job.
Yeah, you got that one.
$11 million, excuse me, $11 million today.
Damn.
Barnum earned $500,000 in back then money, which is $15.6 million today. And she donated her profits to charity. He undoubtedly probably pocketed his.
Yeah.
Or put it back into his business. Barnum then decided to extend his reach into theater, Tracy.
Oh, yay!
Theater at the time was viewed as the den of evil.
I mean, not wrong.
Kind of like a scandalous thing. But he wanted theater to be more respectable, like a family thing. So he built New York's biggest theater at the time called the Morrill Lecture Room.
Mm-hmm. I did know about this.
You did know about this?
Yeah, I knew about this part.
Yeah. He ran matinees, which apparently was not like done at the time. There's only
evening shows. Primarily evening performances.
Yeah, so he was one of the first to do matinees because it would encourage families to attend. Because people kids can stay out, don't have to stay out late, there's less crime, whatever. The opening show was called The Drunkard, which was basically a temperance lecture because he became a teetotaler while he was in Europe for some reason.
I mean, that doesn't sound very family friendly, but okay.
Well, if it's a play about the evils of drinking and why you shouldn't drink, I guess.
I'll allow it.
He ran many plays, including cleaned up versions of Shakespeare and Uncle Tom's Cabin to make them more family friendly. I guess Shakespeare was a little bit taboo.
That's super racist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He rented a black woman. He's a racist.
Yeah, you're right.
That is not surprising. I don't know why at this point in time.
Let's raise a flag on this one part, though.
Yes. It goes without. You're right. It goes.
This is where he crossed the line.
The Uncle Tom's Cabin.
He was towing it before, but now he stepped over.
Yeah.
He had beauty contests, dog shows, poultry contests?
Okay.
And baby contests with superlatives such as fattest baby and handsomest twins.
Feel it. Oh, okay. I mean, fattest baby is not even subjective. That's just measuring. So,
yeah. Baby with the highest BMI.
Did they measure all the babies?
I'm assuming they measured all the babies in the contest.
Correct. That would be my guess.
Reminded me a little bit of the original Not a Doctor story about the incubator babies where he'd have the baby shows to raise money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except that this guy's just raising money for himself.
I mean.
Also in the 1850s, he began investing in the development of East Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Oh.
And some of those investments went under. And so he lost a fuck ton of money. And he went through 4 years of litigation. He was publicly humiliated for his downfall. Sure. But then good old Tom Thumb bailed him out.
Did he donate his 13th birthday money? Like, what happened here?
Tom Thumb at this point was touring on his own.
Oh.
So he's also just making money off of his own.
He's a spinoff.
Condition. Yeah. He decided to go solo.
Oh.
And just tour on his own. Like, look at me.
Breaking up the band.
I am a small person. Look how interesting I am.
Taking his talents on the road.
Mm-hmm. But okay. He teamed back up with Barnum. They went on tour together, and Barnum was also doing lectures on temperance at the time. And by 1860, by 1860, he was out of debt, built himself a mansion, and resumed ownership of the museum. I guess he had kind of had to give it up for a few years.
Okay.
Back at the museum, he built America's first aquarium, which is kind of cool.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Mm-hmm. Apparently we never had an aquarium before that.
Huh.
Featuring Fiji mermaids. Just kidding.
Oh, no, did it really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. I was about to just give up.
He expanded the wax figure department of the museum. Chang and Aang came out of retirement and did a 6-week stint at his museum.
Okay.
They did so because they were trying to raise money for their kids' college funds.
Aww.
Yeah. Barnum introduced a creature called the, what is it? All capitals.
No. No. I refuse to believe that's real.
That's what it was called? That wasn't the, like...
That's how he displayed it,
You know, ad for luring people in?
Was it all caps?
All caps. What is
Amazing.
It?
Amazing. What is it?
What do you think this is going to be?
It's a thingamajig.
Oh my God, let me tell you,
what do you think this could possibly be?
A woman experiencing orgasm.
Nope.
Unheard of in those days.
I was gonna say that it was gonna be a woman something.
Yeah.
No, it's
is it actually an animal or is it a person?
It's more fucked up. It was a creature that he found, quote, in the wilds of Africa.
No, it's just a typical black person, isn't it?
It was a, quote, half wild native African, half orangutan.
No, and it's just a regular black person, right?
It's just a regular black guy, an African American guy. named William Henry Johnson, and he had dwarfism and microcephaly. Barnum made him speak a made-up African language.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's pretty... No.
I don't think you can call it awful. A made-up African language. It's just a made-up language. It's
a made-up language that he claimed was from Africa. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he made him speak a made-up language, and he said he came from Africa, so...
I definitely mentioned that in my zoos segment.
About this specifically?
Yeah. Oh, I don't think I mentioned that it was Barnum, but...
I remember you talking about like having African American people or African people on display as part of the zoo.
Right. Yeah. No, we're talking. It was the same thing. I don't know if I explained it in as much detail, but
I remember you talking about that though, like a made up language. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty awful. Oh, pretty awful.
That's bad.
It's yeah. Bad. Where is he in terms of the line now, Tracy?
Oh.
That line you drew at Uncle Tom's cabin.
Ooh, the line. We can't even see the line. We can't even see the line anymore. Yeah. It's that far behind us.
He soon added Anna Swan and Commodore Nut to his exhibit.
Commodore Nut?
Commodore Nut. N-U-T-T.
I hope it's a squirrel. Be a squirrel.
No, that's actually this guy's last name.
Oh. I really had hope.
Anna Swan was a woman with gigantism, and she stood 7'11" tall.
Shit.
Wow.
Commodore Nutt, whose real name was George Washington Morrison Nutt, had dwarfism.
Okay, but his real name was Nutt.
His real name was Nutt, yes.
Okay.
Was he the person that woman was the nurse for? Maybe it wasn't really a lie. Maybe she was George Washington's nurse, but just not that
George
one.
Washington.
I think you're giving us George Washington. Too much credit. Too much credit.
Yeah. I think you're playing at a different level here.
He had dwarfism and he became like the new Tom Thumb because Tom Thumb was doing his own thing at this point.
Sure.
Barnum visited the White House and saw President Lincoln with Commodore Nutt. As the Civil War was raging, he had a bunch of pro-Union exhibits up, like pro-Union exhibits, lectures, plays at the museum, which led to a Confederate sympathizer trying to burn down the museum in 1864. Unsuccessful, but then in 1865, it actually did burn down, though the origin of that fire was never determined. Okay. He rebuilt his museum elsewhere in New York City. Mm-hmm. And then that museum also burnt down in 1868, at which point he just like gave up on the museum business. He's like, all right, I'm not going to go a third time at this shit.
That's fair.
Third time's a charm.
So in 1865, instead, he decided to dip his toe into politics because why not?
Yeah,
there's a lot of reasons.
I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but we have no rules right now. So.
No. He ran for a Connecticut General Assembly, and he won 4 terms.
Of course he did.
During his run, he began to express a change of heart about the oppression of African Americans. He confessed, quote-unquote, to owning and whipping slaves when he lived in the South. Unclear when he lived in the South, because up to this point, I did not see.
I was going to say, I thought he was in the North during the
Civil War.
Yeah,
I don't know when the fuck he supposedly lived in the South, but he said he lived in the South and owned and whipped slaves, but he was regretful of this behavior.
Sounds like he's shock jocking at that point, like that he's just doing it for the notoriety.
Yeah, I think he's so like from what I read, it's like no one actually knows if any of that was true. He may have actually changed his mind about how he viewed African-American people.
I mean, I hope he did
and regret his actions. But like, it's hard to tell because he's just like he's a showman. That's what he does. Yeah. You know, I mean, he clearly didn't care about being a racist fuck when it profited him in his shows like earlier prior to his political career, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to brag about how successful he was with Joyce Heth. But then after the Civil War ended, he started changing.
He was like, that's not politically cool anymore.
Yeah, he like realized that that was not okay. So he kind of changed the way he told the story about her. Mm-hmm. He, like the story was shorter.
I mean,
a little
he's a
more,
spin doctor in that sense.
Right. Like, he was a little bit more apologetic. He made it out like there was this like minuscule little event in his history rather than the thing that launched his entire career into show business. You know,
sure.
Like downplayed it quite a bit. Oh, and in politics, he was also anti-contraception.
Of course he was.
He sponsored a law that prohibited, quote, any drug, medicinal article, or instrument for the purpose of preventing conception.
Of course he did. How did he feel about it after the child was born? Was he into,
Did not discuss that.
Was he into healthcare or anything that might improve the lives of the children who are now in his community?
Nothing that was explicitly pointed out in my articles that I read.
Great.
He also made it a crime to be an accessory to the use of contraception, which makes me think of like the Texas law now where like the Uber driver. Like the fucking Uber driver who takes you to the gynecology office can get roped into an abortion lawsuit.
It's fine. Let's just put bounties on the heads of women. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Unrelated to Barnum's story, but enraging, that contraception law that he helped get enacted wasn't overturned until 1965. Which is upsetting. The Supreme Court overturned it.
I mean,
some things happened so recently in history. It's true.
You don't realize how there's a whole TikTok account that like shows up for me sometimes where it's this guy. He's saying, I'll look for his handle, but he's saying like, you know, we didn't know how these certain things worked until, you know, 2002. Like there was something ridiculous. I'm blanking on what it was. Oh, we didn't understand how x-rays worked until like 2001 or something. Like we were just like, oh well, this is showing us a picture, we don't know how it works, but like cool. It was something like that.
I can see that. Like
it was something like that. They were like, you know, it's probably science, but we don't know how it works.
It's probably science.
Yeah. I'll find the handle. And
there's a lot of like accidental science where like you stumble on a discovery and you're just like, oh,
don't fully understand.
Don't
why
really
this
know
is
how I
thing.
Got here, but it's an interesting result. So
I mean, sure, but these are like things that you just kind of assume we know how it works, and we absolutely don't.
Yeah.
I'll find the handle.
Yes. Basically, the point is, we don't realize how recent some of these, like we don't think about how recent some of these things are.
Yeah.
Because it's just been, we take it for granted. Yeah.
So like when our parents were like, when our parents were children, this was illegal.
Yeah. That's craziness.
Mm-hmm. Think about it in like, from the perspective of like who we know now that was like alive and what they were
impacted,
like our parents were in elementary school. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh my God. Anyway.
Yeah, I hate that.
In 1870, at the age of 60, he started the P.T. Barnum's Grand Traveling Museum, Menagerie, Caravan, and Hippodrome in Wisconsin with a partner, William Cameron Coop.
He's a little late bloomer.
Yeah, so he's known for the circus. He didn't start the circus until he was 60.
Yeah. Good for
that
him.
That was not like, I don't think Hugh Jackman in that movie was supposed to be 60.
Oh, no. No. Hugh Jackman.
How old is he in real life, though?
His wife is 12 years older than him, but I don't know how old he is. Hold on.
He's 53.
Sure is.
Hmm.
Yeah, his wife is like significantly older. 66. Okay. Yeah. So that's 13 years.
Yeah. Well, anyway, in real life, he was 60 when he started this first circus. It was a traveling circus, menagerie, and, quote, freak show.
Yeah, that seems right.
Yeah. In 1881, so 11 years later, he merged with James Bailey and James L. Hutchinson, and the name was changed to Barnum and Bailey's. I guess Hutchinson didn't care about getting any credit, or maybe he was booted out. I don't know.
Hmm.
Bailey's story isn't nearly as interesting. He was born James Anthony McGinnis in 1847, so he was 37 years younger than P.T.
Mm-hmm.
Orphaned at age 8, went to live with his sister. His sister was apparently awful, so he ran away when he was like 12 or 13. Worked on a farm for a bit, then found a job at a hotel when he was 13 years old. And then he was discovered by Colonel Frederick Harrison Bailey, who helped run a traveling circus and recruited him. He took Bailey's last name, became James Bailey. Took a little time off from the circus life during the war, returned to it afterwards, and by age 22, he was the manager of Cooper and Bailey Circus with his partner, James Cooper. And then he hooked up with Bailey, and now we're caught up to where we are in the story.
Barnum. He hooked up with Barnum.
He hooked up with Barnum, and that catches us up to where we are. That's his story. Not nearly as entertaining.
Okay.
Barnum had this, like, really long, like, multiple scrolls Wikipedia page, and Bailey was, like, one scroll.
Yeah.
That was it.
That makes sense.
But Barnum was like the showman. He would come in riding the elephant. He liked being in the spotlight. He liked promoting and advertising and like, you know, just being over the top, and Bailey was more like the businessman who stayed behind the scenes,
sort
of deal.
Man, yeah,
right. Exactly. So he was more in the background. He was not the big showman that Barnum was. Theirs was the first circus to have three rings.
Sure.
That's where the three-ring circus thing came from.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Their attractions included Jumbo, an African elephant purchased from the London Zoo. They had acrobats. They had freak shows, quote-unquote, still. General Tom Thumb was there for a little bit. Always popping back in.
He's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's here. He's there. He's every fucking where.
Yes.
Barnum and Bailey briefly split up between 1885 and 88, then came back together to create Barnum and Bailey's Greatest Show on Earth.
It was just a trial separation.
It was. And they were one of the first circuses to tour by train and probably the first one to own their own train.
Cool.
Barnum became known as the Prince of Humbugs.
A humbug.
I mean, I feel like that's Ebenezer Scrooge, but okay.
Humbug meant a hoax.
Oh, okay.
He shamelessly used humbugs or hoaxes to entertain people. But he had a line. His line was frauds such as spiritual mediums.
Really? He's anti like spiritualism and religion. Like,
yeah. He had a big thorn in his side against like mediums and would try to like call them out and disprove them. And I think at one point he was like, I will pay a medium X amount of dollars if they can prove they can talk to the dead. And I don't think anyone ever did. But
that was kind of like Houdini's thing as well. Like, he went on, like when I did the Winchester House, I talked a little bit about how he would go like on a tour to like disprove mediums and like hauntings and those kinds of things. Like, it's not spiritual and what you're seeing is not actually magic. It's just tricks that are fascinating. Like, that's all.
Yeah. It's just an interesting hill for him to die on considering his line of work. That's
yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody out there is making a point of calling him out as being a fraud on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it's just interesting that he has no problem like making up this fucking mermaid and like frauding people into coming to his show, but like spiritual mediums, that's a line. That's where his line is.
Yeah.
Do you think he thought like nobody believes this is a mermaid? Like, it's just like, do you think that was maybe part of it? Like, he didn't actually think he was fooling anyone.
I think maybe also I'm not hurting anyone versus like a spiritual medium who's like pretending to give guidance or like pretending to talk to a loved one like that. Morally, there's a little something more there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think maybe that's where the line is in his mind. Maybe I might just be speculating. I don't know. I can see that, though. Like, I'm just creating entertainment, and if you believe it, you're an idiot, versus, like, I'm saying that I'm talking to your loved one.
I can't be responsible for men who think that my eyelids are actually gold. Like, that's kind of the stance he's taking on this.
Sure. Mm-hmm. In 1874, months after his wife passed away, remember Charity, he had a wife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's been along the whole time, just in the background. She dies, and now Barnum, 64 years old, marries Nancy Fish, who was a friend's daughter that was 40 years younger than him.
Cool. Yeah,
that's kind of gross.
Cool.
In 1875, he was elected mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut. And as mayor, he improved the water supply. He brought gas lighting to the streets. He enforced liquor and prostitution laws, and he helped open the Bridgeport Hospital in 1878, and he was their first president.
Okay, so he made actual improvements in the world.
Right. So he's kind of like
he's just a dichotomy. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. He's got some really sketchy, fucked up shit, but then he actually does some like good shit, too. Like, he made theater more acceptable. He improved this town.
Yeah.
It's hard to have a strong opinion on him.
I think we're all a little bit of Barnum in that we have good and bad things.
I'm a little bit Barnum.
La, 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 la.
A little bit of Barnum.
La, 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 la.
God, I want to rewatch that whole show now.
I've binged it twice
already. I was just
already
thinking about restarting Community again for like the seventh time.
Barnum died from a stroke in 1891 at the age of 80. But prior to his death, he was gravely ill and knew he wasn't long for this world. So he asked a New York newspaper to publish his obituary early so he could enjoy it himself.
What a power move. Damn. I mean, that's impressive.
Right?
That's impressive.
That's a little egomaniacal, but it's fine.
But I
want to see how much you're going to praise me once I die.
Just the balls, you know? Like,
he's got them.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Bailey managed the show alone until he passed away from a skin infection in 1906 at the age of 58. The Barnum and Bailey Circus was sold to the Ringling Brothers in 1907, and they officially merged in 1919, forming the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly 100 years later, Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron starred in the movie The Greatest Showman, which glossed over 90% of the main character's sordid and complex history, but had a great soundtrack.
Sure does.
The end.
This is the greatest show.
Yes. I love it so much. That soundtrack is so, it puts me in such a good mood. I'm going to go listen to it.
I have not seen it.
Oh.
What?
Liz, you need to watch it. I mean, I don't think it's a spectacular show by any means, but I think the music was good.
It's not the greatest show. This is an awful show.
Go watch it now.
I feel like it was an okay movie, but the music is good.
No, it's beautiful.
What? How did they portray Lynd compared to the true story, Tracy? I don't really remember her role that well.
Because
they had her as like part of the show, didn't they?
I mean, they made her a little bit more of a love interest than she was, but...
But wasn't she also like in the circus act, kind of?
Well, no. He promoted her, basically. Oh, okay. So... That part actually was not super off base.
Okay. Yeah, I remember reading in my research about her that there was a couple of portrayals of her in movies and media and stuff where they always made her more of like a love interest, but that wasn't really what it was.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely had some sexual tension between the actress and Hugh Jackman, but I wouldn't say it overtook the story by any means. They just kind of made it sound like it was contributing to the deterioration of his marriage. But I think the more likely cause was him being, you know, away on tours all the time, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, yes, yes.
So anyway. If you think Harpy Hour is the greatest show, you can listen to Harpy Hour on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen, please rate us and leave us a captivating review.
Do you have any memorable circus experiences from your youth that you look back on and find questionable? Tell us about it on social media. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Harpy Hour Pod, or email us at harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com.
Have you made millions of dollars on questionable businesses, such as a circus promoting racism and general awfulness? As usual, don't tell us where you got the money, but please donate to us to help keep us on the air. Head on over to Patreon and check out the different tiers we have that you can donate at, and please donate to us. We'll keep this greatest shit show running.
We are the greatest shit show.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, bye.
Your donations are never enough.
Never, never.